Hey, we just got a good show to do. Let's just make it happen.
Quickie. Okay, I'm ready. Hey, you made it. It's the Bro Show. My name's Jerry.
My name's John.
Oh, man, we are ready to cook, John. Season of the Werewolf. We're in the middle of our 6-month season. We've got a great werewolf story today. I can't wait to share it with the folks. We got a good word. Mm-hmm. We've got a great two takes, and not to mention groaners, huh?
Oh, yeah. I hit the old groaner vault with some real dusties, some oldies but goodies.
And if you want to be notified when this show is coming on, then you want to go to www.bro.show or just bro.show. That'll do it. And there's all kinds of buttons where you can subscribe. Subscriptions are free, and not just free monetarily, but they're trouble-free. Right, John?
You got it. Very gentle reminders.
Yes. Yes. Like the man with the rubber glove. So... Yes. Yeah. Yeah, that goes on. And also, we have all kinds of other good stuff going on. We have a sponsor, for instance, and we also, you know, we have T-shirts. John, are you wearing one of our T-shirts?
Yeah, you know what? I decided I'm one of these modest guys who doesn't like to wear the T-shirt with our mugs and you know, big. Yeah. So what I do is I feel more comfortable wearing the one with the insignia on it. You know, the one with a little circle in the corner there, and it's black, and that way I feel much more comfortable wearing that one with us there, you know, you raising your hands and me just kind of smiling my ass off, and it's a pretty good shirt.
Yeah, it's a great shirt. Smiling your ass off. Well, you know, I broke with tradition today. This week was St. Patrick's Day, and my son's birthday, and so I decided, well, I would wear a shirt in his honor. We have Happy Joseph Patrick's Day.
Hey,
his name's Patrick. Yeah. So it's green, shamrock, the whole thing. So I'm wearing that to honor my son. So
makes a lot of sense. I'm sticking with the werewolf. I've got my werewolf, werewolf coffee stocking cap on, too, to just kind of keep me warm. Because, you know, so that's. Has become my attire during the winter, which of course now we've kind of bounced into spring, but that's okay.
And back into winter.
It's snow back into winter. Yeah, we have a little snow in the horizon. That's for sure.
So anyways, tell us about our sponsor real quick, John.
Yeah, our sponsor is the Animal Legal Defense Fund. And this fund's mission as a 501c3 organization is to protect the lives and advance the interest of animals through the legal system. Very active organization. And how they do is, well, I'm going to give you, how do they make this happen? I'm going to give you an example. Yeah. They do support tough animal legislation. And most recently, the fund urged its members to support the Strengthening Welfare in Marine Settings SWIMS Act, which right now is on the table at U.S. Congress. And they're, you know, and what it has to do with it, it's interested in ending the exploitation and mistreatment of marine animals. And it's very timely, which you will see as we get into our two takes. And also, it's very important for us to say this organization has swag.
They do. They have great T-shirts. John got me one. I love it. You can get one, too. We got all the notes on getting swag, our swag, their swag. All down at the bottom of the show notes, there's links. And by the way, if you buy our swag, our werewolf T-shirts, not a problem. The money goes to the Animal Legal Defense Fund. That's it.
Hey, very good.
Yeah.
Boy, and you know, I can't wait on this wolf, this story, our werewolf story for this week. So I'm just going to lay it on.
Well, let's do it.
Give you a little intro here. We're going to be doing a series of shows on a very specific, very important movie as it relates to werewolves called The Wolfman, made in 1940. 41. And Universal, the studio that made many movies about monsters, in fact, they were called the House of Monsters, enjoyed plenty of success with their Dracula and Frankenstein, based on the novels of those two movies. However, they had not experienced the same success as it related to werewolves. They had a movie called The Werewolf of London, which we talked about, but it was not a big box office hit. So as a result, they decided that they were going to do another movie, but this time around, they're going to clear the slate and do a whole different storyline. And they laid this task about coming up with a story onto a Universal screenwriter, a veteran screenwriter who had recently written a screenplay about the Invisible Man. So he had some cred. And maybe what you can do is we can talk a little bit about, because this really gives us so much lore and myth that we then carry on. So perhaps you can give us a little bit of the deets as it relates to this incredible guy.
Yeah. Born in 1902 in Dresden, Germany. Kurt Siodmak. Lived there. And then around 1937, he attended a Nazi rally and heard Goebbels give a very scathing talk that was anti-Semitic in nature. And since he was a Jew, he thought, sounds like a good time to leave town. And so he did. He left Germany and went to England. His brother was a film director, and he got him in the business. Now, Siodmak was trained as a mathematician, John. So this is the first of several ironies. Okay. A mathematician becomes a screenwriter and enters the movie business.
Yeah, I think then his family really put a hard influence on, pressured him into pursuing math to start out with, but his true love was writing.
Yeah, he's a good writer. He wrote several novels and stuff. Anyway, enough about that. Here's the real heart of this story. So he attended that rally and it made a real impression on him. Of course, when he left Germany and went to England and subsequently the United States, he kept up with his friends in Germany and he heard all the horror stories and you know, read the stuff where it was printed about what was going on with the Jews in Germany, Poland, and Austria, and all these terrible stories and terrible things that were happening. So finally, he ends up in California, and you just laid it out, John. Universal had these hit movies and just couldn't quite get the werewolf part of it right. And they hired him. He wrote the screenplay, and he virtually, based on very little really, wrote the werewolf myth, the lore. Right. He created it out of his experiences in Germany, which is really amazing. So he watched his friendly German neighbors turn into monsters. Right. So werewolves turn into monsters. They're not born monsters. They become that way through circumstances beyond their control, some sort of curse. Right. And then here's the part, the really interesting part, John. What happened was he made part of the lore that when you're fixing to change into a werewolf, you will see a pentagram in a circle on the palm of your hand. Right?
This had future use. That's for sure. It created the lore rather than towards lore. He actually created his own items, which are carried forth, and that is probably one of the more important ones.
And this came from the Star of David that the Jews had to wear in Germany and Poland and elsewhere under the Third Reich. It's not exactly the same, but he changed these things up a little bit. But those are the two big things. I mean, he took his experience and he turned it into a really moving expose, a kind of a story. And you're right, John, this thing has hung on and hung on and hung on for decades. Elements of this story persist in all werewolf books and movies. Isn't that exciting?
Amazing. It is amazing. I think the key difference between the movie that failed and the Wolfman, which succeeded, are the fact that the Wolfman is a victim rather than being a pursuer and a monster in its own. He does has no choice.
Yeah,
and that is and that idea of being a victim is I think the critical piece that he offers as it relates to it. But there are other things in it that are just amazing. I think the poem. You know, we think, well, that poem is probably that was a poem written a long time ago. No, not quite. And how about a little bit about the poem then?
Yeah. Even a man who is pure of heart and says his prayers by night may become a wolf when the wolf bane blooms and the autumn moon is bright.
Yes. Pretty heavy stuff.
Gave me chills. Gave me chills, John.
It that is actually stated several times. That is just not a one-off in the movie. So you get to hear it several times, and it has a resonance and an importance as it relates to it.
He wrote another, it, right? He wrote that poem.
He wrote the poem. This is and that you know it's just there is no novel with respect to wolves before this, and we got to give full credit to Kurt as it relates to this. Another kind of thing that comes out of this is the silver. Silver plays an important part in this movie, too. So we don't need to go into the details, but that's very, very critical. But that's a piece that he invented. It's when I watched the movie again just yesterday, I noticed that although Moon is mentioned, it's not shown in the movie. And in addition to the fact that really the full moon comes later as we look at some of the other movies, which we will, you know, like I said, have future parts on it. So it's incredible, the stuff that's come out of this. And I think it's very important for us to give credit where credit's due as it relates to it. And I think, you know, we could take a look in future at movies afterwards. I think The Makeup Man is another one that we'll probably
we'll talk about
pursue.
That at another time. Yeah, absolutely.
Sounds good.
All right, dude, we got a word.
Do we have a word? And you know what I'm going to have to give you? You accidentally fell into this word. You talked about it, and I all of a sudden thought about it. I said, hey, let's just run with it and do that word. So why don't you lay it on us a little bit as to this word, because it is an animal. So you're the
it
animal.
It is an animal. Yeah, I guess I am. It's a manatee. We ran into this because of the two takes we're going to do. This animal is native to the area that John will be talking about in the two takes, Sarasota, Florida. Okay, let me give you the definition. Any of several plant-eating aquatic mammals in West Indian, Floridian, and Gulf Coast waters, having two flippers in front and a broad spoon-shaped tail. All species are endangered.
Yes.
Okay, here's an example sentence, John. We got out of this article. Where to see manatees in Sarasota? Okay, welcome to Sarasota, where the warm waters are home to some of the most gentle and fascinating creatures on Earth, manatees.
And explain how that might actually fit into a myth as it relates to humans because of the flipper that it has.
Yeah. This is pretty cool. This is pretty cool. Actually, a lot of people feel like some of the mermaid myths came out of people seeing a manatee from a distance. You know, these pirates and stuff who were around Florida, John, they drank a lot of grog. And their eyesight wasn't so good once they got going. And they wanted to see women, and I guess they thought these manatees were mermaids. And plus, you know, they hang out where they graze on seaweed and agriculture that grows, you know, around the seabeds. And it can look kind of like hair if they're, you know, got a mouthful or got it on their head. So it's a tricky business, John. They were mistaken for mermaids, and they are amazing animals. John, here's one for you. Do you realize what animal group this wonderful being lives in?
Yeah. No, I don't. You know. And I do know. And it's too mind-boggling because you would never, I would have never guessed it. I mean, this really doesn't have a background that even relates to sea animals.
No, it will, you would not think it's related to the elephant.
Wow.
Yeah. Now, here's your clue. I never, if you saw one of these, you might start thinking that way a little bit because their skin is wrinkly.
Ah.
Okay. Isn't that something? Isn't that,
that
something?
Is something else.
Yeah.
Well, we learn something about animals new every day. Yeah.
Me too. Walruses or cetaceans. Oh. Yeah.
It looks a lot because I've seen them quite often, and we get a chance to see them at the aquarium there.
Question for you. I got a question for you, John. Sorry to interrupt. Do they have these guys around Sarasota? It says they do. Where would we go to find one?
Well, I'll tell you what. The Keys, and I think the one that's the most popular for them is Lido, the Lido Key, which is the one closest to downtown. And the best thing you can do is there's one of the things we can talk a little bit about now that you can do in Sarasota. It's really cool. Is kayaking tours. So, and I've actually met some of the guys who run the tours. They're very experienced, and you can go out and actually they know where some of the manatees are located. You're getting fairly close to them. So that's a good way of doing it.
Okay, cool. Thank you for that. Hey, let's do our two takes. I'm excited.
Hey, well, we're going to be, let's kind of give the lay of the land here a little bit on, and I actually made a decision to go to Sarasota, but why did I do that? We talk a lot about baseball, this and that, whatever, and I'm baseball centric. That's what I do down there. But that isn't what attracted me to Sarasota. In fact, just briefly, back in 1977 is when I started going to Sarasota. Marge, my wife, and I decided to take a road trip to get there. And we got there a day early, and by getting there a day early, we couldn't stay in St. Petersburg. We wanted to go and see a ball game. There had to be one for 50 miles south of there in Sarasota. So what we did is we went to the ball game, and afterwards got lucky and was able to get a hotel room in the Hyatt Regency that was overlooking the bay with a balcony. I mean, I just fell into it. I couldn't believe it that I got this. We were so impressed with the one-day experience we had in Sarasota that we decided that from then on, we would go to Sarasota rather than St. Petersburg, and I continue to do that to this day. Really hadn't thought too much about that until I read and saw there was an article while it was written by the New York Times about Sarasota while I was down there called 36 Hours in Sarasota. Now, me being kind of the naysayer, pessimistic guy as it relates to cities, said, oh, no, somebody got stuck at the airport in Sarasota for 36 hours. Little did I know that it was a glowing report about Sarasota. And I will just make one quote from the reporter that was sent down there. Often overlooked in favor of Tampa to the north and Miami to the south, Sarasota on Florida's Gulf Coast is a laid-back city that is content to keep its white sand beaches out of the spotlight. Yeah, this is Florida's best-kept secret as far as I'm concerned. Just a couple of quick facts. Sarasota, it can get misleading by the population of 55,000. That's the city population. The metropolitan area is is closer to 70,000, of which it is, it's a retirement to some extent area, even in addition to the tourists, and about 25% of the people are over the age of 65. But what I'm the most impressed with as it relates to Sarasota is it's got a town downtown that works. It's a walkable downtown where many of the locals live in high-rise buildings and also tourists lodge in such buildings. And you can find there in the downtown area, it's famous for restaurants, farmers market, eclectic mix of shops, music ranging from classical music in their performance hall, Van Wetzel. And also it's got live concerts 7 days a week in the downtown area. So I find it, it's I go there at least a couple times while I'm in Sarasota. And while I'm at it, I'll just quickly mention that, talk about the beaches. There's two beaches. There's the Mortoni Longboat / Lido Key to the north, and there's a more hip Siesta Key one that is south. And both are active in, like we've already mentioned, the kayaking and a bunch of other activities. White sand beaches, they've often been the best in the country. And both keys have good eating, shopping opportunities in St. Armand Circle in Lido and also in the village on Siesta. So just the other thing about how do you get there? You got two airports. You got Tampa, 50 miles north of Sarasota. And you've also got the Sarasota Bradenton Airport. Both I've taken direct flights from Chicago going into both airports. A word of caution as it relates to spring break, which is when I go. This is the most busy time of Florida, and we all know that. But there, you got to be concerned about the fact that you're better off trying to get down there during the weekdays rather than on weekends. And also, there's a fair amount of congestion, and you kind of learn, be it in a few traffic jams, and you figure better ways to get around. And I, after about 45 years there, I've been able to do that. So, you know, there's some things to do, and we'll mention them. And the first one I'll talk about, if you want culture, just go one spot. Go to the Ringling Grounds. Because at the Ringling Grounds, you can see, you've got not only the housing of John Ringling, but you've also got museums, art museums, because he had a great art collection. Bayfront Gardens, an art museum, two circus museums, because this is a Ringling Brothers circus, was housed there for many years. And it's got a historic theater. So you can do all that in hardly in one day. I mean, you've got to spend a couple of days if you want to do it all. And those pursuing a clown career, I got some bad news for you. You're included, of course. The Ringling Clown College closed in 1997. So you're going to have to look someplace else if you want to be a clown the rest of your life. Sorry about that.
I think I am anyway.
Yeah, maybe you don't need to go to college.
I don't need it. I think I audited.
Yeah, you have the training.
Distance learning auditing. Yeah, that's what I did.
Hey, you know, why don't we talk a little bit about the nature side? And we mentioned, you know, the manatee. So if you really wanted to not go out on the kayaking, you wanted to see them. They've got a Moat Marine Laboratory and Aquarium. And I think at this point, we need to mention that it's just not me that's been to Sarasota. You've been going you've spent more than a day or two there.
And I was very impressed. You know, this place has got everything, John. It's got culture. It's got this beautiful aquarium, the Moat Marine Laboratory, which we went to. Saw a bunch of cool animals. You got a super cool T-shirt. They showed us around. They're not just a zoo or anything like that. They're an actual working laboratory, and they let you kind of on the inside. It's really cool. They've got, like you say, this nature stuff. You can go to botanical gardens. They've got a huge music scene. I remember going to bed hearing, when I was down there with you, hearing this guy singing, this Jimmy Buffett style guy singing for all these people outside. It was really cool. And then of course, if you want some brewskis, they've got the Calusa Brewery and a couple other places that you and I went to that have some good stuff. And if you don't drink, they got kombucha that they'll serve you there, too. So it's all pretty neat. Do you have any groaners?
I dusted off a couple of oldies. And I was cleaning yesterday, and I all of a sudden ran into it. I said, where in the hell did these groaners come from? Now, they're good groaners, but they're a little tough. So and here we go. What do you get when you cross a dog and an antenna? What do you get when you cross a dog and an antenna? This is bad.
Wow. A dog and an antenna? I don't know, John.
A golden receiver.
I love that. That is gorgeous. What a wonderful groaner. Oh, give me another one.
This one is also... Okay. What do you call a person who practices the science of wish granting? What do you call a person who practices the science of wish granting? This is bad.
Genetics scientist.
Genealogist. You got it. Hey.
Genealogist. Okay. You're grading out a curve. I'll take it. We've done another.